You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagmann. It is the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour for today, Friday, October 12th, 2018. And I just want to urge everyone to pray for the, Florida Panhandle. If you haven't seen the images, Mexico Beach being ground zero, the images of destruction from the Florida Panhandle, from the hurricane, my goodness. Just take a look at the images. Take a look at the pictures. I know we've got a lot of listeners in Florida, and specifically in the north and west portion of Florida. These are incredible images. So please keep your prayers in whatever you can do to assist the efforts. If you're near that area, if you can, there's no words to describe the images from this hurricane. Sharks on shore. My goodness, just the devastation. So, look, I know there's a lot of things news-wise to get into. The biggest part, I think, right now, is as I've been talking about, is the Spygate, is the coup against President Donald Trump. By the way, it's day number 631 of the Donald Trump presidency. We've got about 3 weeks to go to the midterms. We've got a battle forming ahead of us. If we lose the House, if we lose the Senate, if we lose any portion thereof, it will be absolute gridlock in Washington. Seriously, it's not gonna be good. The left will tank the investigations. But the story of the day, I believe, continues to be the coup against Donald Trump, Spygate, whatever phrase you want to use, the weaponization of the intelligence communities against Donald Trump. Now, I know you might get tired of hearing me talk about this. Yesterday, it was reported, and actually today, depending on where you look, Fusion GPS co-founder Glenn Simpson will invoke his Fifth Amendment protection to avoid congressional testimony. We saw Rod Rosenstein say, nope, not going to testify. Now we have Fusion GPS co-founder Glenn Simpson saying he's going to invoke the Fifth Amendment. He's not going to agree to testify to Congress. This was yesterday, actually, when he said this. And we touched on this in the flagship show last night, but the evidence that has come out and testimony from others before him, specifically that of Bruce Orr, well, they differ from, how about this, Bruce Orr, Glenn Simpson and Bruce Orr's testimony and others, other related testimony, they are at odds with each other. Now, if you go back in time, you look at Glenn Simpson, look at his testimony before before the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. If you look at that of Christopher Steele, Bruce Orr, note that the evidence and testimony, the testimony in particular recently before the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, for example, by Bruce Orr, is directly at odds with that of Glenn Simpson. The testimony from Bruce Orr notes that he met with Glenn Simpson and Christopher Steele in August of 2016. The important thing for everyone to remember here, this investigation into President Donald Trump, this so-called Russian collusion investigation, what you see by Mueller, taking place by Mueller and his team of assassins, if you will, all of this began without any probable cause. This was a political hit investigation from day one. And the media is convincing the minions on the left, the protesters, the sign holders, the placeholders, whatever you want to call these people, that Donald Trump colluded with the Russians and, in fact, is Vladimir Putin's puppet. That's what the left wants you to believe. The testimony that the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence has developed is showing that's not the case. Not the case at all. As a matter of fact, right now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty in terms of the testimony. When you look at what Glenn Simpson previously testified to and Bruce Orr testified to, there are inconsistencies there between the two. Now remember, Glenn Simpson previously said that he only met with Bruce Orr sometime after Thanksgiving of 2016. That would be after the election. And the FBI interview notes of Bruce Orr that Congress requested to be classified, well, they haven't seen the light of day yet. Why? Compliments of Rod Rosenstein. Okay. But I digress. Simpson, Glenn Simpson, who was a former Wall Street Journal reporter, founded Fusion GPS with two other individuals, but Simpson hired Bruce Orr's wife, Nellie Orr, back in late 2015 to work on the Trump opposition research project. This, according to Conservative Treehouse, as it's all drafted out there. Now, the research effort, the opposition research effort, evolved into Christopher Steele writing this dossier after the DNC and Hillary Clinton hired Fusion GPS in April of 2016. So follow the timeline here. Late 2015, Nellie Orr gets a job at Fusion GPS. Christopher Steele reportedly wrote the dossier, the 35-page dossier, after the DNC and Hillary Clinton hired Fusion GPS in April of 2016. But I would stipulate this. This goes back even earlier, but that's long before the fall date, the fall of 2016 date, or the even the late, it depends. Some people say August of 2016. You're looking at early 2016. In fact, you're looking, I'm sure, April, as I said, with respect to the hiring of the DNC and Hillary Clinton hiring Fusion GPS of April 2016. But there's more that was going on around that time and even before that time to get to that point. But now this is pointed out by Conservative Treehouse and Sundance. One of the most likely reasons for Glenn Simpson, of course, to take the Fifth Amendment is his network of activity that extends far beyond the Department of Justice and the FBI. And it directly connects to the Obama White House within that election time frame that the dossier was being compiled. And it is not coincidental that Obama recently began seeding the media with a story about why the White House was active in the Trump-Russia collusion narrative. There's a whole lot of CYA going on out there with respect to Barack Hussein Obama. In the New York Magazine Wednesday, that there is someone attempting to exert the CYA narrative here. If you look at I'm not going to get into the New York Magazine piece, except to say that to me is Exhibit A, and I agree with, in this case, I agree with Sundance on this. That is a clear indication that someone associated with the Obama regime is trying to create an alibi, or that's not quite the right word, an excuse as to why the White House, why in particular people within the Obama regime were engaged with the same elements that compiled the Trump dossier. Now, the New York Magazine article, I'm just going to touch on this. It outlines this secret meeting, this secret strategy from the Obama White House to force then-candidate Donald Trump to accept a defeat in the 2016 election. It was in October 2016 when senior staff in the Obama regime, in the Obama White House, discussed what they should do if Hillary Clinton won the November election and Donald Trump refused to accept the result as legitimate. Remember that discussion back then? Okay. Well, the Obama White House came up with a plan. And, man, this is just so crazy. And the plan was just very simple. They would have high-level Republicans validate the election result. I mean, it's just that simple, where Trump could not appeal to anyone within his circle of contacts within the Republican Party. And, again, in the event that Trump tried to dispute a Clinton victory, they would affirm the result, as well as conclusions reached by the U.S. intelligence community that there was indeed Russian interference in the elections, and that interference was in favor, attempting to bolster now President Donald Trump and not Clinton. Now, this goes back, and you have to go back and recall the names and the times and the events, but despite the claims of DNI James Clapper and John Brennan in the final report that Mike Rogers compiled, the fact that well, Mike Rogers obviously disagreed. The NSA disagreed with the premise that the Russian election involvement was there to help Trump. Specifically, the Russian efforts went both ways. They helped both. Well, you can look at it in any number of ways. You have pro-Clinton Russian interference, shall we say, or the interference being nothing more than ads on Facebook that could be traced back to Russian entities. And then you've got pro-Trump the same way. But and actually, when you look at it, there in reality were more pro-Hillary, I don't want to say bots, but automated ads and favorable postings than there were for Donald Trump. But I digress again. But when you look at the timing of all this, right now, the New York Magazine and the media, they're circling the wagons. They're attempting to make an excuse for why Obama was actually involved in Spygate. That's as simple as that. Going back to the Sundance article here, in hindsight, he writes, the actions and motives by all of the participants in October 2016 became increasingly clear. As quoted by Hillary Clinton during the second debate, October 9th, 2016, and remember this, Hillary Clinton, and I'm going to quote her now, this is October 9th, 2016, during the second presidential debate, Hillary Clinton said the following, and I quote, and this is in response to the questions and such, but, you know, let's talk about what's really going on here, Martha, because our intelligence community just came out and said in the last few days that the Kremlin, meaning Putin and Russian government, are directing the attacks and the hacking on American accounts to influence our election. Remember that day, that our October 9th, 2016 talking point there. She continued, and WikiLeaks is a part of that, as are other sites where Russian hack information. We don't even know if it's accurate information. And then they put it out. Now I'm quoting Hillary Clinton conversationally here, so it's going to sound kind of cumbersome. We never in the history of our country have been in a situation where an adversary, a foreign power, is working so hard to influence the outcome of an election. And believe me, they're not doing it to get me elected. They're doing it to try and influence the election for Donald Trump. This is Hillary Clinton, October 9th, 2016. Now, the reason I bring this up, this is, again, it's in the Conservative Treehouse article, but it's also important on the wider scheme of things. When you start, if you take, for example, the Dan Bongino's new book, take that book. You take the open source information on CTH, Conservative Treehouse. You take the book titled Deep State by Jason Chaffetz, another book, The Russian Hoax by Greg Jarrett, and the book Compromised by Seamus Bruner. If you put all of the information contained in these works on the table and you distill them down, here's what you've got, quite simply. You've got, at the base level, you've got the leftists in the form of the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign creating this narrative that this is way back, actually way back in the early summer, late spring, April of 2016, creating a narrative of Russian collusion, or of Donald Trump being influenced or being or assisting Russian efforts here in this country to undermine our election process. That's what you've got. That's what supposedly began all of this. But what's really hard to put your finger on, and what's really nebulous, and Dan Bongino points this out, is what he calls paragraph one. Where did this investigation start? What was that one event that created the necessity for an investigation of Donald Trump? Some say it was Carter Page. Others say, oh, it was George Papadopoulos. Others say, well, no, it was Russian hacking. The presence of the server, Alpha Bank server, in Trump Tower. You get all of these different answers to that question. And as Dan Bongino points out, no one can complete that paragraph one, or no one can point to that the reason, the ostensible reason, the FBI got involved. And if you talk to the leftists out there that are protesting, or even talk to the leftists within the media who are absolutely convincing people, or trying to convince people, that Donald Trump was a puppet of the Russians, you're not going to get a single straight answer to the question, what prompted the Department of Justice and the FBI's investigation into Donald Trump. Have you noticed that? The answers are all different. What prompted it? Well, this is what both Dan Bongino, Conservative Treehouse, and Jeff Carlson, Market Watch, and Epoch Times, this is the question being in the crosshairs to disclose the reasons or the, you know, how this all began. Because in order to understand how this all started and why this all started, you have to identify the very first starting point. And it's all, if you look at the answers, they're all different. You can't get them nailed down. Well, something has happened, again, here recently, that will shed sunlight onto this whole matter. And you know you're getting close to the truth, of course, as Rod Rose, or as Glenn Simpson says, nope, not going to testify. Nope, not going to come back and testify. And Rod Rosenstein, nope, not going to testify. You know you're over the target. Well, let me take you back to, let me take you back to earlier this year. The Nelly Orr, remember when Representative Daryl Issa, he was being interviewed by Maria Bartiromo about the testimony of Bruce Orr. And Issa had said that Nelly Orr was working for Fusion GPS in 2015. Now, before that statement by Issa, the timeline for Nelly Orr working with Fusion GPS, that started in April of 2016, which was simultaneous with, or it matched the time when Fusion GPS supposedly began their contract work for the Clinton campaign and subcontracting of Christopher Steele. So Bruce Orr said, no. Nelly Orr began working for Fusion GPS in 2015, the year before Glenn Simpson said that Nelly Orr was working for, began working, or he hired Nelly Orr. So you have conflicting testimony right now. If you go back in time and look at all of the open source reports, Nellie Orr actually began working for Fusion GPS in late 2015. Glenn Simpson testified under oath. No, it was April of 2016. Now, who would know better, the husband of Nellie Orr or Glenn Simpson, who actually hired him and is trying to cover his, you know, behind? Obviously, it is Bruce Orr. And why is this important? The reason this is important is, remember the report by Mike Rogers I mentioned earlier about the subcontractor access to proprietary databases, the FBI and NSA databases. And remember, it was Mike Rogers who shut that down. But this was after it was found that the contractors were using the proprietary databases to conduct political opposition research. They exploited the FISA 702 processes, which would be available for counterintelligence purposes, under the Department of Justice National Security Division. And one more time, remember Sally Yates putting the Department of Justice National Security Division outside of the purview of any inspector general oversight through her letter, her finding that the National Security Division would not be subjected to inspector general oversight. So let me just kind of recap this. I know it's kind of confusing, but what we have here is previous testimony from Bruce Orr that Nellie Orr began working for Fusion GPS in 2015. You had Glenn Simpson stating, no, she began working for Fusion GPS in 2016, both testifying under oath before the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Now, here this week, Glenn Simpson says, well, hey, I was subpoenaed, but I'm not going to testify because you're really not trying to get to the truth, or whatever his reason might be. When, in fact, the testimony between both are conflicting. Now, hold that thought. I know this is confusing, but it really doesn't have to be that confusing. We have the Mike Rogers report that Mike Rogers caused to have been created, the investigation conducted, where there were subcontractors conducting this political opposition research by exploiting the FISA process, the FISA 702 process. And that's when Mike Rogers shut down. But from shut down the entire process, shut down the access to the databases by subcontractors. So they, meaning the political opposition, had to get their information from somewhere else. It would be like me. I've got access to proprietary databases as an investigator. So I can look at, for example, I can get all sorts of information about a person or people. If I abuse that process because I am audited in my use, if I abuse that process, they could take away my ability to access the databases. Now, I'm not talking NSA or FBI. I'm talking about proprietary databases from third parties. It's the same with this. It's the same with Bruce Orr. It's the same with the entire process of political opposition. So what happened was, when Mike Rogers, the head of the NSA, found that Fusion GPS was tapping into the databases, abusing the FISA process, and getting information, some of it that standalone information, which by itself was meaningless, but using it as political opposition research to help Hillary Clinton, Admiral Rogers turned off the spigot, prevented. He said, no, Fusion GPS and every other subcontractor, you're cut off from the database access. It was only then when Nellie Orr began working for Fusion GPS. The reason, she had access, obviously, to Bruce Orr. She was the conduit between Bruce Orr, who is giving information via Nellie Orr to Fusion GPS, circumventing the database access process. So the number four at the Department of Justice, Bruce Orr, his wife, who is a Marxist apologist, an apologist for Stalin, is now working for Fusion GPS and using Brusor as the conduit, since the actual ability to get information was cut off by Admiral Mike Rogers. And this is what the media does not want you to, does not want made public any more than it already has been, if that makes sense. There were unlawful query activities that were being conducted by political operatives, agents, and Department of Justice and FBI affiliates. And Fusion GPS was a big part of this. And Glenn Simpson right now is being called to account for the activities, and he is unwilling to go under oath and testify. There it is. Now, let's fast forward to this week, or let's talk more about this week here. What's happened this week that's pretty doggone explosive? All right. If you listen to Dan Bongino, and if you listen or if you read or follow the work of Jeff Carlson and just about anyone who's been on the trail of this story, this week we saw the admission. Well, we saw James Baker, the former, we saw James Baker testifying before congressional investigators, providing explosive testimony. And stating that Michael Sussman, a lawyer for Perkins Coie, the law firm that's been working for or was retained by the DNC and Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, was giving information to FBI General Counsel James Baker and at least one journalist far ahead of the FBI's application for FISA surveillance warrant on the Trump campaign. What this is doing is pushing the timeline earlier in the process. This is also, by the testimony of James Baker here, the FBI general counsel, this week, it is laying to waste the testimony of Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS. It's contradicting all of the testimony that is favorable to the process that would protect, shall we say, the deep state. This is why this week is so critical, has been so critical. If you go to the Epoch Times and look at Jeff Carlson's column, he writes that the information provided by Sussman, which could have been used by the FBI as corroborating information, it's troubling given that the main source of the Russian collusion allegations, former British spy Christopher Steele, had been hired by Perkins Coie, the law firm Sussman works for. Let me say that one more time. The information provided by Sussman could have been used by the FBI as corroborating information. Now, writes Jeff Carlson, this is particularly troubling given that the main source of Russia collusion allegations, former spy Christopher Steele, had been hired by Perkins Coie, the law firm Sussman works for. It was only this week, or primarily this week, I shouldn't say only, but primarily this week, when Michael Sussman's identity was revealed by James Baker during congressional testimony, closed-door testimony. James Baker testified before congressional investigators on Wednesday, and Representative Jim Jordan came out and said, whoa. He went on Fox News. He said this: during the time that the Department of Justice and FBI were putting together the FISA, the warrant, during that time prior to the election, there was yet another source, another actor, another colluder, shall I say another perpetrator, another source giving information directly to the FBI, which we found the source to be pretty explosive. Now you have Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows coming out swinging, telling Fox News, for example, that the source who provided information to the FBI in this Russia case was not previously known to congressional investigators. This is new information now. And this is why you've got rats scurrying for back to the darkness. Both Jordan and Meadows came out and disclosed this information from closed-door testimony. that James Baker, in his testimony, identified Michael Sussman. Oh, but it gets worse. It gets deeper. You've got John Solomon coming out with articles now. Whereas before he was coming out with an article every other week or every week maybe, now the articles are just flowing. The reports are just flowing out. Something has changed. Well, John Solomon of The Hill, he disclosed that Baker had met with at least one attorney from Perkins Coie. That would be Sussman. The meeting was, according to John Solomon, to discuss allegations of Trump-Russia collusion in advance of the October 21st, 2016 application for FISA, the FISA warrant on the Trump campaign advisor Carter Page. What's this all doing? This is in direct conflict to Glenn Simpson, who I would say at this point lied under oath to congressional investigators. It's putting Bruce and Nellie Orr in a much more precarious position, and is pushing the timeline backward. And it's also, by extension, implicating the Obama White House and Hillary Clinton in this directly. This is why this is so significant and explosive. We are seeing the wheels come off of Spygate. End of story. We're seeing the wheels come off of the Mueller investigation. Oh, sure. The left will tell you, well, look at the arrests, you know. Look at the charges. None of them have anything to do with Russia and Donald Trump. A lot of them are process crimes. Others are the financial crimes having to do with Manafort. But nothing with respect to Donald Trump and Russia. So here's the other part of this. Perkins Coie, again, the law firm that retained Fusion GPS and former British spy Christopher Steele on behalf of the Clinton campaign and DNC. That's who we're talking about. It's, for example, the way I look at this and the way I'm able to understand this is I'm an investigator, and law firms would hire me, especially in cases that are going to court, to do backgrounds or provide information to them about a subject that they will be facing in court, or that they intend on filing suit against. It's as simple as that. Perkins Coie retained Fusion GPS. Consider them the PI, or consider them the entity, the opposition research entity, which they were. And Christopher Steele, maybe consider him the PI, on behalf of the Clinton campaign and the DNC. And equally important here is the fact that the involvement of Perkins Coie was not disclosed to FISA. None of this was disclosed to the FISA court. The dossier itself that was ostensibly produced by Christopher Steele, although it could have been written in part by Nellie Orr, I've often said that, would later be used by the FBI as really the primary evidence to obtain the FISA warrant on Carter Page. But now, it appears that Perkins Coie was acting as an outside source to corroborate Steele. So how does that work? You have Perkins Coie corroborating the information of the individual hired by Perkins Coie. It's circular, and it's kind of like a circular firing squad. It's not right. And we have Catherine Herridge coming out this week, who confirmed the identity of Michael Sussman. Sussman reportedly provided James Baker with documents and electronic media related to the alleged Russian meddling in the election. And it just so happens that Sussman is their cybersecurity guy. Oh, and Sussman? He's the man who handled the alleged hack of the DNC servers. Remember, the DNC servers were reportedly hacked. This was disclosed on April 28, 2016. The hack actually happened on April 18, 2016. But it wasn't a hack. It was a download. But again, put that aside, we're talking about date and timelines here. April 18, 2016. Is when this breach occurred. I'll call it a breach. They're calling it a hack. And this is where this is where the discussion about the DNC staffers, Seth Rich, for example, comes into play. Seth Rich. But right after this hack was discovered, about 10 days after it occurred, or this breach more accurately was discovered, they called in Sussman. And Sussman contracted the other entity, CrowdStrike. He didn't go to the FBI. So CrowdStrike was hired by Michael Sussman of Perkins Coie instead of taking the servers to the FBI. The FBI requested the servers. They were not given the servers. Instead, Sussman was the contact that brought in CrowdStrike. So Sussman's all over the place now. But his name did come up in the hack/breach, but it didn't come up in the context of contact with James Baker until James Baker testified before Congress this week. That's why this is so important. And all of this pushes the timeline back, and it affects it just pushes everything back, and it shows that the people like Glenn Simpson lied, at least in my view, under oath in congressional testimony. And perhaps Bruce Orr did as well. This is why Glenn Simpson refuses to go back and allow the Congressional Committee another bite of his apple, because no, he's going to have to admit, he's going to have to contradict his previous testimony, and he does not want to do that. Take a look at the House Intelligence Committee's final report on Russian active measures. There is a reference within that report to a meeting between James Baker and an unknown party. And this relates to footnote 43 on page 57 of that final report on Russian active measures. Now, the only reason I'm tossing this out, Dan Bongino spoke about this earlier this week. I'll point this out as well. Tracy Beans also talked about this in one of her previous YouTube videos. Let me just give you the bottom line here. The footnote 43, you're going to be hearing more about this in the news, perhaps, or at least in the new media, shall we say. But footnote 43 on page 57, which was like redacted heavily, pointed to an individual, pointed to specific individuals, or at least one individual. Let me read the footnote here. The footnote said this: in September 2016, redacted, shared similar information in a one-on-one meeting with FBI General Counsel James Baker. Well, obviously, it's meaningless without the name there. The House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence executive session of redacted, December 18th, 2017. So, you know what? I'm not going to read the entire thing because it's full of redacted, the word redacted and such. It doesn't make any sense. But it does go into, it does state the date of December 18th, 2017, provided by the House Intelligence or House Report is significant. It corresponds with a set of interview dates related to the Russia investigation. The dates were revealed following a House Intelligence Committee vote on September 28th to release a number of the transcripts taken from the interviews during its investigation of 2016 election interference by Russia. What does this all mean? December 18th, 2017 is the date that Michael Sussman was interviewed by the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. In other words, they had this information. They attempted to cover this up. When I say they, I'm talking about the Department of Justice and FBI. The Department of Justice and FBI attempted to cover up the identity of Sussman until it came out now this past week. Does that make sense? The name Michael Sussman from Perkins Coie, the FBI Department of Justice, under Jeff Sessions, under Rod Rosenstein, specifically Rod Rosenstein, attempted to keep Michael Sussman's name out of everything. Well, that worked until James Baker testified before the committee, this Congress, this past week, and blew Glenn Simpson out of the water, and effectively, I will add this, at least in my personal opinion, corroborated some, but also blew up some of the testimony of Bruce Orr. Now, one more thing, And this is, people are making a really big deal about this. I think it's important as well. Remember the discussion about a Trump server or a server, a Russian server in Trump Tower. Remember that discussion. Remember all of the allegations pointing to a server, a computer server in the Trump Tower. That was the subject that was used, or that was the item that was used to promote the Trump-Russia collusion narrative. Remember that. The server. Alpha Bank. Does that ring any bells? Okay, here's where it all kind of comes together. And here's where the left, the Mueller investigation and the left, their entire operation, their entire narrative is actually falling into pieces or breaking into pieces. The server and Alpha Bank were investigated by the FBI and found to be nothing, really not connected to anything regarding Donald Trump. It was discovered that the server was not operated by the Trump organization. It was operated and managed by a vendor that organizes email marketing campaigns for hotels and resorts. The traffic this consisted of spam, basically, as pointed out by Dan Bongino. Again, just to give credit where credit is due. So they used this server. When I say they, as a matter of fact, Hillary Clinton specifically, if you go to her tweets, Hillary Clinton actually made mention of this server in a tweet during the election, saying, look, oh, look, they found a Russian server in Trump Tower, suggesting, of course, complicity or attempting to bolster the claims that Donald Trump was working with the Russians. So I know this sounds boring. It sounds dry. But let me just say this. What we're watching this, especially this week, what we are seeing is the deep state, the exposing the deep state, the members of the deep state, people such as Rod Rosenstein and members of the FBI and the intelligence community, Brennan in particular, James Comey as well. We're seeing all of their stories fall apart. And it's in part because of the testimony of a very high up guy in the FBI named James Baker. And he's the guy that has testified this past Wednesday in a closed door session. Now, in identifying the individuals that were, whose names were redacted in various documents, including that footnote 43 of the that report of the House Intelligence report that I mentioned. I'm sorry, the House Intelligence Committee's final report on Russian active measures, which is going to become, you're going to hear more about that again in the context of Sussman, in the context of Glenn Simpson, Bruce Orr, and Hillary Clinton. Now, I mentioned before, but I want to just mention this again. It was October 31st, 2016, 2 years ago almost, that Hillary Clinton sent a tweet that stated, computer scientists have apparently uncovered a covert server linking the Trump organization to a Russia-based bank. That was what? How many days before the election? A week before the election, she sends this tweet out. This exposes the network between Hillary Clinton, the DNC, Perkins Coie, in the personage of Michael Sussman, Glenn Simpson, and how everyone was working in concert with one another. How the Department of Justice and FBI at that time, Comey, Brennan, they were all working together in concert with each other to have Hillary Clinton elected. That's what has come out this week in the hearings, bringing forth the identity of Michael Sussman, although he was known by many under oath. Bringing him forth now connects many of the important dots. And again, I know this sounds dry. I know this sounds convoluted and complicated, but really it's not. So, Glenn Simpson. Now, I go back to the Conservative Treehouse. It knows exactly who, from the White House, was involved in the efforts to support his covert activities and overt activities against the Donald Trump campaign. Note as well, Glenn Simpson, remember, this is the guy, Fusion GPS, refusing to testify, saying, I'm not going to testify this week before the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. I'm not going to do it. It was his wife, Mary Jacoby, who visited the White House on April 19, 2016, which was the day after NSA Director Mike Rogers shut down the contractor access to the NSA and FBI database on April 18, 2016. So look at the timeline. Nellie Orr, working for Fusion GPS, her employment began in 2015, not 2016. Glenn Simpson's wife, or Mike Rogers, commissions an investigation of contractor access to FBI and Department of Justice proprietary databases, only to find out that Fusion GPS, among other subcontractors, were abusing the process and taking proprietary information without any rightful cause, without any proper cause, using it as political opposition. Michael Rogers shuts down contractor access to the NSA and FBI database. That was the report was commissioned in 2015. The access was shut down on April 18th, 2016. The next day, Simpson's wife, Mary Jacoby, goes to the White House. So, you look at Mary Jacoby. According to Conservative Treehouse, the wife of Glenn Simpson, Fusion GPS co-founder, Mary Jacoby, with years of Russia-angled reporting, including Donald Trump, visited the White House in April 2016 at the same time as the DNC and the Clinton machine hire Fusion GPS to conduct the opposition research on Donald Trump surrounding Russia. And in fact, CTH posts the White House log. Glenn Simpson is not only the bridge that connects Spygate to the DNC, he's also the person that connects Obama to the illegal spying operation. That's why he doesn't want to talk. Now, I just want to address something here at this point about testifying before Congress and contempt of Congress, because this has come up. I've been emailed about this many times. Let's go back in time just a tad. Remember Attorney General Eric Holder and other members of the Department of Justice. They testified for a year almost about Fast and Furious and programs related to Fast and Furious. Remember that back during the Obama years? Holder testified 9 times before Congress. Holder and others lied and lied. And this was absolutely confirmed in a letter. There was a 471-page report by the Department of Justice Inspector General contradicting the testimony of Eric Holder, who was under oath. And they drafted a letter telling Congress that the ATF was confiscating guns, but the exact opposite was happening. I'm not going to get into the minutia about Fast and Furious at this point. But to understand the process of Fast and Furious is to understand the process of the lawlessness and the contempt of Congress and how people are getting away with it. You have members of the deep state exerting things like deliberative privilege, which is, I shouldn't say made up things, but invoking certain things that are not relevant to the testimony. Deliberative privilege is a common law privilege not recognized by Congress anyway. This, of course, in the face of, at that time, and I bring up Fast and Furious, you had a murdered U.S. Border Patrol agent Brian Terry, Now, the reason I brought this up is because the contempt of Congress is so rife today. And it has gone unpunished. Now, just let me be clear on this. The members of Congress, specifically, for example, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee and other committee chairmen, could subpoena anybody. They can unilaterally subpoena anyone. They don't need any vote from any committee. They don't need permission from anyone. Certain members of Congress could issue a subpoena to anyone unilaterally. They could haul them before the Congress and compel them to testify or compel them to invoke the Fifth Amendment, which is happening to Glenn Simpson. Well, there are two types of subpoenas that could be issued. One is to compel testimony, and the other is to compel documents. Right now, I'm looking for the word. The subpoena power that Congress has is being ignored because it has gone unpunished for such a long time. If you go back way back in time, and I know Jason Chavez talks about this or writes about this, go back in history. Go back to 1857, and I know this sounds like a boring history lesson, but it's not. It's relevant. Congress passed a law ruling that anyone found in contempt of Congress was criminally liable. Now, what that did was strengthen the check and balance system. But then Congress agreed to change the way contempt would be enforced. Instead of holding time-consuming hearings, Congress agreed to certify matters of contempt to the district attorney for the District of Columbia, whose duty it should be to bring the matter before the grand jury for their action, which was a mistake. But the second mistake was failing to rectify the error when the Reagan administration first discovered the use, how people were using that to avoid prosecution. It was before that time when congressional threats to certify a complaint to the DA generally resulted in cooperation. Between 1975 and 1998, there were 10 votes to hold cabinet-level officials in contempt. This is kind of an important history lesson here. Each one resulted in complete compliance with information gathering. But back in 1982... a Congressional Oversight Subcommittee subpoenaed the records from the EPA regarding mismanagement. Remember the Superfund hazardous waste sites? Remember that back in the 80s? Well, Reagan's EPA advisor or administrator, at that time, Ann Gorsuch. Does that name ring a bell? Ann Gorsuch? Neil Gorsuch? That's right, the mother of Neil Gorsuch. She refused to comply with the subpoena. Now, Gorsuch claimed executive privilege. And the rest is history, because Holder invoked the same and was found to be in contempt of Congress. So this goes way back to the checks and balances. That's the only reason I mentioned it. It goes way back to like 1857, when the Speaker of the House certified the matter. Well, at that time, the various scandals for prosecution of the DA, and they found that it was pretty expeditious to do so. And that compelled cooperation. Well, that's been basically right now. The entire enforcement arm of Congress has been removed, because people are saying, why aren't people being criminally charged? Because the process has changed, and people don't stop and bother listening to it or bother researching this. Fast and Furious, the ATF, that whole process fell into the black hole that was created by this ability, or that Congress changed the rules, or the rules were changed in compelling testimony. And the reason I brought this up is this is what we're seeing today. Various changes, rules back in history have consequences, and we're seeing that today. Now, what they can do, however, and what they should do, is hold Glenn Simpson and every other individual who refuses to testify in contempt of Congress and they should reinvoke, which they have the ability to do, hold the prospect of criminal filings over the heads of those who refuse to testify, including but not limited to Glenn Simpson. That's where we're at today. Let me reiterate, Congress does not throw people in jail anymore. But technically, in limited cases, under certain conditions, they can. And they have. This goes back to 1795, when a guy by the name of Robert Randall tried to bribe three congressmen to support this land grant way back when. But the House ordered the sergeant-at-arms right then and there to take Randall and an associate into custody while a committee was appointed to decide how to proceed. That can still be done. They didn't wait for the executive branch to prosecute. At that time, back in 1795, now people might argue, well, it's not 1795. It's not the 18th century anymore. It's not back in time anymore. However, they still have that power. Both houses of Congress have that power to compel testimony, to enforce cooperation by precedent. And as a matter of fact, there was a Supreme Court decision in 1821 that verified this. And I know this sounds pretty boring. However, if you look at what is taking place right now, Congress does have the power to compel testimony and ultimately through a series of steps, if used properly, to jail the people, the witnesses, such as Glenn Simpson, until such testimony is given or the documents are produced. And they've got this authority at this point in time. However, the media, among others, and even certain members of Congress want you to believe that doesn't exist. And one more time, the reason I mention this is because we are seeing now a critical point in time where we've got Glenn Simpson refusing to testify. He's invoking his Fifth Amendment rights. You've got Rod Rosenstein refusing to show up. The Congress has the power to handle this without executive branch intervention. They could do it without executive branch intervention. And that's extremely important because they've got the separation of powers and the sole authority to compel testimony. And they should use it. And lastly, how this all ties with the midterm elections, that authority, as tentative perhaps as it might be, given the various precedents and various situations that have taken place from the 18th century forward, should the balance of power change in the House and Senate from the Republicans to the Democrats, everything will be lost. This entire investigation will no longer be discussed, really. It'll be relegated to the dustbin of history. Much like Benghazi, much like the Hillary Clinton emails, this will be pushed under the carpet, which is why you see people like Jim Jordan, Devin Nunes, and others pushing for all of these hearings right now and compelling testimony right now, because they know if they lose the House and Senate, nothing further will be done, which is why we must get out and we must vote for the Republicans in the midterms. And I know this is not happening as fast as you want it to happen. All of these investigations not happening as fast as you want them to happen. I'm with you there. But what's the alternative? The alternative is there will be no investigation. At least right now, we can compel our congressmen, both houses within Congress, to get on the ball and do their jobs. Folks, I hope this made sense to you. It was a very complex topic with a lot of different names, dates, and ins and outs, but I hope this made sense, at least in the aggregate, in the totality of the issue. Spygate, nothing more than attempted coup against Donald Trump. Folks, thanks so much for listening. I appreciate it. May God bless each and every one of you.
The Doug Hagmann Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagmann Report.
Tune in to the Hagmann Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmannReport.com. That's HagmannReport.com.